Women's Bible study has been a few mornings, and we're starting at 2:15. So, beginning 7 o'clock in the church.
Viva, are you babysitting? Don't be living up to Richard. I'm going to do this. Are we on the modem of accountability or what? Okay, pray. Pray, God, we want to hear. We want to hear your heart. And we want to hear what I'm sorry for the way that we make up our own standard of what pleases you. Make up our own standard of what is acceptable in our relationship with you. People have always done that. We've always been thought we were, as humans, as fleshly humans, we've always thought we were wiser than you. You say, don't eat of the fruit. You say, well, that couldn't be so. And we still do that. I'm sorry. I ask you to teach us. Teach us so that our relationship with you can be right. Teach us so that we can do more than just sing with zeal, but we can live with zeal. Thank you that we don't have to be guessing and wondering. I thank you that we have your word as a baseline. I thank you that we have your spirit as a teacher. We depend on both of them today to teach us wisdom and teach us your truth. Amen. Well, I've never heard that child cry. I didn't think it did. I thought that was it. Yeah. I thought it was a cryless child. So, here we are. Chapter 5 of Matthew. I hope nobody's saying, are we ever going to get done? No. But, let's, God willing, we'll move on in 6 next week, but I really want to ask why. Why did Jesus do this? Why are we doing this? Why are we spending the time to do this? And I know if we don't ask that question, we're in trouble. Because Jesus is very, very out of the box here. Jesus got killed by the people who claimed to know God over this truth, over what he spoke and what he continued to reiterate throughout his ministry. What he spoke here in Matthew 5 wasn't just one time that he spoke something. It's spoken throughout his ministry that we have a record of. Paul spoke it, and they were all in trouble for it. Because the people didn't do it. Let me read something a minute. Because I think this is a very apt description of, in some ways, even our country. Brethren, in chapter 10 of Romans, Paul's talking, and he's talking about his Israeli, his Jewish brothers and sisters. He describes, he says, brethren, speaking to them, my heart's desire and my prayer for them. He's speaking to the believers, the converted Gentiles and them. My brethren, my heart's desire and my prayer to God for them is for their salvation. For I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not in accordance with knowledge. For not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of God. That should be something that spurs us all spurs us all, because I think that directly confronts the contemporary view. I hope and I keep reciting it and keep saying it and keep speaking of it, because our culture has such a strong misconception about saying something with your mouth and showing zeal when there's a lack of obedience and surrender to God, and saying that you're, and yet giving the credibility, well, you're still fine, you're still a Christian because you said the prayer. And any of us growing up in America who don't, who aren't struggling that are not addressing it. Because it is such a strong thought. In fact, it's a taboo. I mean, it's amazing how those things happen in our culture. You know, certain words, I don't necessarily need to go there, but certain words, you know, that were fine when we were a kid now become the most wretched and terrible of words you could say. And culturally, we tend to impose that standard on, and it becomes, we don't really question it. It just becomes such an absolute standard. Our political correctness in our country is so wretched, not based on truth, not based on, it's just based on what our culture says. Unfortunately, the concept that if you say a prayer, you're saved, no matter what your life looks like after that even, if you say a prayer and show some zeal, you're saved. That is not what the Bible says. Paul was talking about the Jewish people, and I grew up with a bit of a misconception, but in the last years, I've been trying to evaluate it based on what the Bible says. You know, I kind of grew up with the impression that all the Jewish nation, all the nation of Israel was saved. You know, for the most part, they were saved, you know, because they're God's chosen people. So those, you know, God's going to give them a hall pass because they were his kids. That's a complete lie. You know, that's a complete lie. You look at the explanation of that. I mean, the example of that we have when God called the people originally out of Egypt. And most of them died in the wilderness. It's the same thing God calling them then, is God calling them now, is God calling us now. It doesn't matter. Many are called, but few are chosen. God called the nation Israel, million plus people, I don't know how many, million and a half plus, potentially twice that, potentially three times that, that he called out of Egypt, and most of them wilderness. They didn't enter the promised land. Okay? God called them, God saved them, called them out of the bondage that was there, said, I will give you freedom, I will show you who I am, I'm going to take you a long way around over this promised land I've given you, rather than going from here to here. They went from here clear down here to Mount Sinai, he said, in order that I might show you who I am, in order that I might show you that you will fear me, so that when you come to the promised land, when you come to that point of saying, okay, are we ready to do this? And I say, okay, are you willing to give your life up? Are you willing to die to yourself and enter this land to take possession of it that I'm going to give you? And I'll be with you, and I'll be with you. But are you willing to lay your life down that you will fear me and you will be obedient to me? What happened? Almost all of them said, no, we're not willing. We're not willing. We're not willing to lay our life down. Okay? That's not what we signed up for. We signed up for you to lead us out of the promised land and lead us out of Egypt and send us into the promised land. Just give it all to us. He says, no, you're going to have to die. You're going to have to be willing to die, to lay your life down. Okay? To fight these people, to fight these monsters, to fight these giants, to fight these warriors, to fight. And most people ran in fear and they said, we want to go back to Egypt. We want to go back to eating leeks and onions by the Nile, leave it, go away. And God was very furious, was very angry. They died in the wilderness, all but Joshua and Caleb and their families. Okay? But that's not very many of the millions of people. And the young people who aren't the age of accountability, the people under 18, the kids under 18, they roamed for 40 years and died in the wilderness. Okay? They didn't enter the promised land. Most of those people went to hell. Okay? I don't know if some of them repented during that time. Possibly they did. But they certainly, the representation we have is that same representation of God calling us today. And we better confront that. I find myself still struggling with that. Because in our culture, we say because somebody has said the prayer, they're saved. And it's taboo to question that. It doesn't matter. Oh, they're just a carnal Christian. They're living for themselves. Well, they're just a carnal Christian. Well, that's just the way it is. That's part of sanctification. God has grace. We're under grace and mercy. We're not to judge. We have all kinds of political correct ways that say, you know what, and I don't really care if you're going to hell is what it really says. I don't really love you. I don't really care about you. If somebody says, I surrender my life to the lordship, the absolute lordship and authority of Jesus Christ, and then lives for themselves, and we go, oh, you're fine, you're okay. That's hatred. That's not love. That's hatred. Okay? That's saying that I am really, because that's living complete opposite, counter of what you did. I say I've surrendered to the lordship of Jesus Christ. I've given my life God, my life is no longer my own. I've been bought with a price. We say the words right, and then we live our life contrary. That is it. We have the responsibility to say, you know, I love you enough to say, I think you're confused by a cultural interpretation of Christianity. Because God says, if that's the way your life looks, you have not surrendered to the Lordship. Your life, it will be evident. Okay? And it doesn't matter how much zeal you have. Look what he says about these brethren, my heart's desire and my prayer for God, for them, for the Jews, for the zealous. And tell you what, for us to think that we're zealous Christians because we go to church and show up once in a while and don't do certain things that other people do and do certain things that seem like the right thing. We have no, the nation of Israel was zealous. I mean, it was wild. I mean, when you look at all the feasts and all the things, the reasons, the holidays and the things that they had to go to Jerusalem for, I mean, their life was consumed by their devotion to God. Okay? Were they zealous? They were zealous. They were more zealous than we American half-hearted supposed churches. Okay? They were zealous. They would drop everything they had and walk. They couldn't catch the bus. They'd walk to Jerusalem, maybe hundreds of miles, a few times a year probably, and go camp out there to keep the feast, to keep the festivals, to do the sacrifices. I mean, their whole life was oriented around it. Were they zealous? They say, but my prayer is for their salvation, for I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not knowing about God's righteousness. And listen to this, seeking to establish their own. They did not subject themselves to the righteousness. We have our own standard of righteousness in the American Christian church. And why do we care? Why do we care about them out? Why do we? Because the people, all the statements that he makes and starts out with, you've heard that it said, do not commit adultery. You've heard it said, do not murder. You've heard that it was, these were all standards of righteousness that did it? It could, because I hear the battery's not doing very well. So, it's an older battery, but anyway. We need to, yeah, it's going bad, isn't it? We need to understand that Jesus is establishing God's righteousness and bringing an explanation of that. We just sang some songs, okay? We just sang some songs, you guys, and we're willing to sing some songs. Now, I don't think there is any more. Eric checked already, so. Or he left them at home, actually. He got some, but he was half responsible. So, here we are. He said we could rate a smoke detector, but they're probably about 5 years old and they probably ain't any better on it at the moment. So, but God help us, if you want this recorded, then let's do it. Purify me, purify my heart. I choose to be holy. I mean, those are the words we just sang. Do we mean that? I mean, we feel good when we sing it because it makes us feel real kind of holy, kind of good, you know. Cleanse me from my sin and make me pure. I mean, those are big words that we either need to mean or, pardon me, shut up. Okay? I mean, those are big words we're saying. Holy, holy God are you. All the saints bow down. Is that the God that we worship? A holy God we bow down. Righteous are your ways. So merciful. Righteous are your ways. I mean, we sing these songs that are right. I mean, that was an amazing set of songs that spoke of the magnitude of God's righteousness and God's holiness and the sweetness of that and our submission to that, in our agreement with that, in our worship of that, in our glorifying God for that. That's what our lives look like. If it is just, and in our culture, we somehow accept the fact that if you're very zealous, in fact, if you're very zealous about your singing and you feel really good about it, and I feel really good about my God. We talked about it a lot. We orient our whole Sunday morning services around that, right? In because we want to come Sunday morning and walk out of here feeling good about our relationship with God. We want to come in here and spend an hour or two and feel good about our relationship with God. Okay, now I feel good about my relationship with God. I'm sorry, but if that's what makes you feel good about your relationship with God, you're in trouble. Okay? The Jews had their standard of zeal, of what being zealous. Man, they were far more committed than Sunday morning for a few hours, let me guarantee you. Okay? I mean, they were about it. And they felt good about it. And they felt good about their relationship with God. That doesn't matter. It is not a subjective thing. It is not how I feel about it. Are my ways conforming to God's righteousness? Why do we care about the Sermon on the Mount? Because it's Jesus explaining what righteousness looks like, what holiness looks like. Jesus has made a way for us to have a right relationship with Him. Okay? So when we look at the Sermon on the Mount and He gives the outward appearance, it was never meant to be, the law was never meant to be just an outward action. The law was always meant for God to give us a mirror of our hearts. But unfortunately, we're always good about, as humans, trying to project the outward appearance so that therefore we gain the validity of our relationship with God by our peer group. Okay? And if our relationship with God is based on the acknowledgement or the accolades or the praise or the acknowledgement of our peer group, we're in trouble. Okay? That is not to be the baseline. And we orient and set up church in order to do that. That's why we work at make the little bitty things of, let's sit in a circle and look at each other. Okay? Because it makes it a little more uncomfortable. Right? I mean, you can hide in rows behind each other and duck behind so the pastor can't see you, you know. You know, it's a pretty sick way that we've established and set up our orientation. It doesn't mean, I mean, we ought to be good if we grew. We just have rings of circles or something. I don't know what, on it. But But still no hiding. You got to set, you know, it's easy to hide in our church service. It's easy to walk in, not be confronted, right? It's why we've established trying to spend some time early on. No, we need to confront each other. Not in a bad way, in a loving way. We need to be real. We're going to sit down supposedly and corporately worship with each other. We're going to corporately together worship our God. We haven't even said hello. I don't think that works very well. I think it's important to know who and what and who's who and how are you and how is your life going and what is happening in your life. Okay? It's pretty sure a lot of people feel very uncomfortable about that and don't want to come back. You want to come into some place where you just, everybody goes, hi brother, how you doing? Oh, my relationship with God's great. I'm doing good. Yeah, let's sit down and sing. We'll sing. Okay, good. It's great to see you. See you. Bye. Okay? And that's about the extent of your inner relationship and what's happening. And I walk out of here feeling good. You know, and as Steve used to say, you walk right through the erasers as you walk out the door. Okay? And it doesn't mean anything, what was said. Your life doesn't change, your life doesn't reflect it, and you just can't wait till next Sunday so you can come and sing and feel good about your relationship and have all the people in this peer group go, yeah, you're doing good, yeah, I'm doing good, yeah, we're all doing good. Aren't we doing good? Yeah, we're doing good. Okay, let's go. That the thing that matters is, are we in conformity with what God says? And God gave us the standard. Jesus gave us a standard in Matthew 5 in the Sermon on the Mount to say, you need to put this up as the mirror. This needs to look at the mirror. And look, when you look in the mirror and see, how do I look here? In this, you know, it's easy to say, well, I don't commit adultery. Well, I don't know. Did you think sexually about any woman or any man? Did you act sexually toward man or any woman in any way during this week? Jesus said, you committed adultery. You committed infidelity. Okay? In that, why did Jesus do that? So you feel bad? No, so we confess and repent. Jesus died on the cross and set us free. And if we don't have the standard of, Jesus said, to be right with God again, holy, holy are His ways. God is a holy God. We sing about this. We don't have a relationship with Him outside of that. God does not come down and live in an outhouse with us. Okay? That is not what God does. It is about us being sanctified, being changed, being cleansed, becoming pure. And we can do that. He died to set us free from the bondage, captivity of the enemy, of sin, of our flesh, of the devil. Okay? We have Jesus putting a standard here in front of us that says, this is what it looks like. This is what a right relationship with God looks like. This is what a transformed heart looks like. It doesn't look like somebody walking in and saying how good they're doing and saying, maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But that's not necessarily what it looks like. What it looks like is acting itself out in real life here. So, Jesus means this. I mean, this isn't, and we should be grateful for it. We should long to see it and go, okay, how does that look? What does my life look like in light of what the truth of what God says here? What does my life look like? Okay? So that we can say, God forgive me, God help me, God save me, God sanctify me, God set me apart, God change me. Zeal is not the baseline of our right relationship with God. All right? Our zeal is not. God give us zeal. I hope we come up with some zeal. God made us to feel, you know, even Eric, man, can have some zeal, you know, doing it. I mean, Holly has enough for both sometimes, but it's good, you know. This passionate feeling about things, you know. That's a wondrous way God made us. Should we have passionate feelings in our relationship with God? Yes. Yes. But this passionate feeling determine the rightness of our relationship with God. No, we need to put it against our... Are we living according to what God says? So, let's read the last 15 verses, in verse, starting with verse 33 of Matthew 5. Because it is... You probably didn't listen to it, but we'll put it on your iPod or something. So, how many of you thought about last week and what we talked about as far as our words and what happens? Because if it isn't, I tell you, this has not been something that I get to come and teach and come on you guys. This is something that every week I go, oh my. I mean, it's been a struggle to get through because when Jesus is revealing the standard of what's here, you know, I don't hold on to, I am free. I don't have the religious baseline that says certain words are terrible and certain words are right. Those who know me know that's, I don't feel that way, okay? I think that's right. Sort of. There are certain words that are wrong. Period, right? We talked about it last week. There are certain words that are blasphemous. Okay? To speak derogatorily about sexual things. Any words that have a derogatory implication about sexuality, that's blasphemous. That is taking something that God has established as holy and speaking wrongly about it. Okay? So, the truth is, for the most part, any sexual words that we have in our culture, we need to be very careful, okay? Now, there's words that we use out of laziness. There's words that we use, there's certain words that can have cursing, strong emphasis. There's some that sexual, it can be the same word, and we know some of those words. God says that we are never to speak derogatorily about sexual things. But he goes on to say here that, and I am never supposed to curse anyone from anger. Okay? I mean that, it doesn't matter how in the quietness of my car or wherever. Okay? I am not supposed to, and what's the deal here? We talked about this last week, okay? We talked about it last week that it isn't that certain words are wrong from a religious standpoint. We need to be very careful about that. So if I don't say these words, then I fulfill the law, right? That would be very Jewish, okay? That would be fulfilling the law on the outside. The issue is, what spurns my heart to want to curse this person? That as in all these things, when we read through the Sermon on the Mount, the cure, the remedy, the fulfillment, okay, is what? Love your neighbor. Love your neighbor. Love God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, your strength, and you love your neighbor as yourself. And if out of your heart does not come, I care about you more than I care about me, I am willing to lay my life down for you, we should be doing some falling on our face, okay? Because it's my lack of willingness to do that that is willing to respond. And it doesn't matter which word I choose. That's not the issue. To have cover-up words, Christian cuss words, is only to hide our hypocrisy. Alright? The issue isn't, righteousness doesn't come from, oh, those words would never come out of my mouth. Righteousness comes from, that attitude would never come out of my heart. Or that attitude does come out of my heart. You know, I in trying to deal with, I've shared it enough, I don't need to go into it, but in trying to deal with the instant response that I have at times driving to people who are unaware of what's going on around them. Okay? And that it's a dangerous situation, okay? It's not just that my rights were violated. I mean, it's a dangerous situation when somebody's not consciously, cognitively aware of what's going on around them and acting accordingly. The truth is, though, why does that in any way justify an immediate response of cursing them? of naming them in a, as an idiot, okay? Okay, does that justify it? And I've been trying to figure out, okay, how can I stop this response? In the way that response needs to be stopped is by, I see them as a lost soul who's held captive by an evil tormentor. They're not cognizant of the other people around them driving. They're not cognizant of any of that. It's the center of the universe as far as they see, and they can't help it. Right? Because they're me-centered. They're I-centered. And I should have compassion and grace and mercy to that person because they're held captive. And they're in a survival mode of trying to live and trying to exist, however that may look or however that may come out. My heart towards that person, my immediate response needs to come from a heart of love towards that person. Not trying not to cut, or trying not to say bad things, or trying not to react in anger. Trying not to react in anger, covering up my anger, covering up my immediate response of anger, is potential real dangerous hypocrisy. Okay? The issue is, now, should the outburst be something that shakes me up? And I can tell you it is in my own heart right now. In my own place right now, when there's an immediate outbreak, I realize that's a reflection of my heart. That's a reflection of me not seeing that person as God would want me to see that person. Because he said, the whole law is fulfilled. The fulfillment of the law and the prophets is what? Love God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, your strength, and love your neighbors yourself. And we come that, oh, I like everybody. I get along with everybody. I don't hate everybody. And that's how the American church sees that. Okay? So we have buildings full of pathetic nice guys. They're selfish hypocrites. Okay? That are dangerous men that aren't necessarily changed. And I'm not saying every one of them, but I am stereotyping because it's a valid stereotype. Okay? The church tend to attract nice guys. Oh, I don't dislike anybody. I like everybody. And if you're the guy that gets along with people and everybody likes you and you like everybody, then we'll even make you an elder and a leader. Really? Because you're a passive, pathetic man that's a danger to the rest of people because you're unwilling to fight or believe in truth. That's what our churches have attracted. Okay? Not warriors. Not soldiers for the king. Because we learn to cover. This is what your heart will look like. This is what you respond. But shall fulfill your vows to the Lord. That's a commandment. That's an Old Testament commandment. Okay? That's a right thing. That's not a wrong thing. That's a right thing. Alright? There's nothing wrong about that. But how did Jesus say what he says then? That there is an issue of undisciplined speech. And there is an issue of undisciplined speech. Okay? But Jesus makes it very clear it goes way, way beyond bad English or undisciplined speech. He says that anything beyond this is from the evil one. From the devil. That's a big statement. And what does that mean? Is it wrong? Is it wrong to make a vow to God? No. It doesn't say it's wrong to make a vow to God. But I would challenge you because it's a problem that I've sinned and I've apologized and I will continue, to hopefully be, to remain in a repentive state about any that I have set to my own family, to my kids, and to you guys about it, that I do believe that it goes beyond, and Jesus is saying it goes beyond It's not a matter of the words that you use. It's a matter of me emphasizing what I say by extreme swear words. Swear words is an appropriate thing. Unfortunately, we say swear words are just certain words you word, and their Christian variation of them is fine. That's a ridiculous thing. Dang it and darn it and are not any better than the true word damn. Okay? This is not a matter of Christianizing certain words so that we're righteous on doing this. Okay? This is a matter if it's fulfilled in the fact that I love you. Okay? If it's fulfilled in the fact that I regard you as more important than myself. What I believe Jesus is saying then is that I do not need to emphasize this over that when I say something to you, I regard you as more important than myself. And I mean it. Let my yes be yes. And my no be no. In anything beyond that is evil. Okay? Not because of four-letter words. Okay? But because I need to be a man of integrity in what I say. I need to regard you the same way as if I was speaking to God. Whoa. Yeah. If I do not make... Unfortunately, the Jews did the same thing. And I'm back in their culture that they would have that same way of speaking extremely to their peers around them. He says, be very careful when you make a vow to God. Be very careful when you say, we're very careful when we say something to God. We're very careful when we make a vow to God. But to the rest of us, we don't. And Jesus said, that's wrong. That's wrong. When it is a man who lives his life before God, is a man who regards you as more important than myself, what I say to you needs to mean what I say to you. And I am no more to emphasize this than I would God, no less and no more. And I believe that the language that we have, and I don't care if they're the Christian words, quote, the acceptable non-four-letter words, or the cuss words that we say, okay? They're still swearing words, right? They're words that are swearing an oath. They're supposedly validating or giving more weight to what I say. And I think they're wrong to say. I think they're wrong to say, again, in whatever form. It's not a matter of, your heart can still be, and that's something we need to be very careful of. That's what the Jews did always. They covered up the outside. Comes out of our heart needs to come again. Anger, if it comes out in cursing or strong words, derogatory words towards you, that's wrong. Sexually immoral talk, it's obviously wrong. Emphasizing my speech by using extreme language, by swear words, okay, rather than let my yes be yes, right? And it's how we do it. I mean, it's an amazing thing. We say, it's not just, David, do you want to go shooting today? It's not just yes, it's hell yes, right? Right? It's a Bible word, it's okay, you know, I can say it, yeah. So, is that something that I need to do? Is that something I should do? And it doesn't matter what word I put in front of there, we have a whole bunch of them in our culture, right? We have a whole bunch of things that do it to supposedly give extreme weight to that rather than saying, let your yes be yes. And let me read one more and then we'll finish up the rest of the chapter. In James. I'm reading through James. James is a great book. Okay? But it's tough. People struggle with it. You even read some commentaries. It's kind of the last book, you know, they allowed in the Bible, and some even think it's kind of iffy, you know, doing it, you know. Because it says things, you know, like, what use is it, my brethren, if a man says he has faith, but he has no works? Can that save him? Oh, so James the Jew, he was talking about works doing it. Now, James was a follower of the Most High God. He was a saved, born-again man, okay? He was inspired by the Holy Spirit to write this. I'm convinced of that, okay? James is valid. Faith without works is dead. Okay? People struggle with what he does, but James is a very practical book about doing it. Prove yourselves to be doers of the word in chapter 1. He says, but not merely hearers who delude themselves. Okay? If anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks at his natural face in a mirror, for once he has looked at himself and gone away, he has immediately forgotten what kind of person he was. But one who looks intently at the perfect law, which we happen to be reading in Sermon on the Mount, the law of liberty, and abides by it, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man is blessed in what he does. If any man thinks he is religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. That's a pretty big statement. Okay? And I'm sorry, you guys, that I've led a bad example of that at times. We've spoken what kind of put me on that road, but my road, took a very undisciplined and sinful course. And as an example, I was bad. Should have our tongue, if anyone thinks him to be religious, and this is not in a bad way, I'm not talking, not talking about self-righteous religion. Okay? This is talking about true, right relationship with God. If anyone thinks him religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, the man's religion is worthless. That's a pretty big statement, okay? But let me read in chapter 5, verse 12. But above all, my brethren, do not swear. And again, we want to be careful to not give that the religious connotation of that's, I don't know how many, 10 words that you can't say. Something. Okay? That's not what it's saying. It's not certain words that we have made religiously wrong to say. But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any oath, but let your yes be yes and your no, no, so that you may not fall under judgment. That's a pretty big statement. None of us wants to fall under judgment. We should consider what he's saying. And I am certain that as most of this, as we go through it, I hope there's a fairly relentless gnawing at our souls. Okay? That keeps us wanting to know, what does he mean? How does that apply to my life? How does this pertain? And we should be about it, and we should be discussing. You know, we've got lifetimes full of unbridled tongues sitting in this room. On some level. Okay? On some level. What does that mean? How does that look? But let's finish this chapter. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist him who is evil. But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn to him the other also. We all grew up with this, with mom trying to teach us how to deal with a bully in the playground, you know? What does this look like? I don't think it has a lot of relevance to that, honestly. Okay? But what does it mean? What does it mean? It means every day in business. It means every day in life. It means with our co-workers. It's very important, okay? And anyone who wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. And whoever shall force you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. Now, are we going to relegate that to the shelf somewhere and say, well, that's just Jesus kind of being extremist. He was a bit out there those times. Maybe he did another miracle and drank too much wine. I don't know what. But Jesus being a little bit out there and extreme in here. No, he's not. This is in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and this is that Word speaking. Okay? We have to take this seriously. We sing about it with zealous. Oh God, your ways are righteous. God, you are a holy God. And then he says, okay, and this is what it looks like. What does that mean? You know, I want to wait. Let's come up with a standard that we can live with here. Okay. All right. We don't really have to go there. Let's come up with a culturally acceptable standard we can live with. Okay. And I am also certain this doesn't mean that we're to be pacifists. Okay. I don't think it means that we're to be pacifists. Okay? There's obviously a bunch of people within the Christian realm all over the world, but within this Christian realm, who say this is saying that we're to be pacifists. We're not to go to war. We're not to fight. We're not to do that, okay? And they use this to validate it. I don't think it's what it's talking about. I think that, again, is a way to outwardly express something while you're hiding the inward hypocrisy of our hearts. I'm not saying they're all hypocrites, okay? But the issue is he's talking about the condition of a heart. He's talking about a condition of a heart that regards, I don't have my own stuff. It isn't my stuff. It isn't me. It isn't my... You violated me when you slapped me on the cheek? I'm supposed to be a dead man. Why am I personally offended? I regard you as more important than myself. If you're hurting enough, if you're insecure enough, if you're afraid enough, if you're whatever you are enough that you had this, you slapped me on the cheek, should my response be anger and retaliation and that you offended me? I should not be offendable. Okay? I mean, that's a radical thing, but that is what God is calling us to. That is the holiness that he's calling us to. That is the response from the heart of what is right. I'm a pacifist and I don't go to war, right? But that on the inside, that I regard you as more important than myself. Me regarding you as more important than myself might mean I need to kill somebody to protect you. Okay? Not because I want him. Not because I'm angry. Not because I don't like him. Not because their skin's a different color, they speak a different language. Okay? Because and that's a whole other thing, but in God's social, in the world that we live in the social world that we live in, certain mores that are pretty absolute. Do I think capital punishment is right? I do. I think it's necessary to live in a society. Okay? God speaks about it. That is different than my personal response to you. I never have the right to retaliate towards you in anger and strike back at you. Okay? I have heard it. You have heard that it was said you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. I'm not sure where the hate your enemy part came. I mean, loving your neighbor is, there's a bunch of quotes in that, Leviticus and Deuteronomy and stuff where it talks about you're to love your neighbor, okay? You love your neighbor as yourself, it talks about. The hate your enemy part isn't a direct quote. That's obviously one that had been extrapolated, within the Jewish culture. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. In order that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven, for he causes his sun to rise on evil, on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax gatherers do the same? If you greet your brothers only, what do you more than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Therefore, this is a radical statement. You are to be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. know, now, even repeating that again will put me in danger of being accused of claiming that that we live or we are to live in sinless perfection. There's a whole skewed doctrine that is really no different in many ways than the Jews themselves. And that they came up, as we read before, they came up with their own standard of righteousness. And if I do this and don't do that, okay? If I say darn it, if I say shoot, okay? If I say, I don't know, there's a lot of them, okay? If I say certain words and don't say others, I'm righteous in doing that, okay? Don't cuss, don't drink, don't chew, don't go with girls who do. That's kind of the standard, you know, that we have religious mores. And if we keep those religious mores, those will acclaim me as being a valid person, as in my relationship with God, as being a righteous person. Even sure where I would end up in that one when we're said and done. But on the other hand, there's a side of it. He could have. Okay? Jesus was tempted. But Jesus never lived out his sin. He didn't have a sin nature. Okay? Because it never became alive. That was a distinction. He wasn't a man born of Adam, right? And born of God. He did not have the sin nature inherent in man. Was he capable of that happening? Yeah, so did Adam. Right? Was Adam born with a sin nature? No, he wasn't born with a sin nature. Okay? Did Adam choose to bring alive his self, his sin nature? Yes. He chose to exalt himself over God. He chose to feed the me syndrome, the my syndrome, the I syndrome, okay? All the things that come along with that, with my pride, my self-esteem, my self-worth, and my value, all those things that happen that we exalt so highly in our culture, okay? That come as Adam brought that to life. Jesus, in the same way, as a human, Adam wasn't born of a man, was he? God breathed life into him. Right? Jesus is called the second Adam. Okay? And Jesus did not sin. Jesus did not give in to sin. Jesus did not give in to sin nature. He always was in submission to his Father. Now I believe as a little boy, this is a profound statement for parents here, okay? Because Jesus didn't sin. Or does anybody disagree with that or find that questionable? Or he didn't sin as a little kid. He had some good parents. Okay? Because as a child, what was not sinning? It was his will being in submission to his Father. Profound thing. Mary and Joseph, they're spoken of at the beginning of being righteous. Right? And of being led by the Holy Spirit. And that's how they're spoken of. That's how they parented too. Okay? They did not cause their children to sin, which all of us have done, who are parents. Okay? We've all asked things of our kids wrongly. We've all not had our yes be yes and our no be no. We've all said, okay, go get ready for bed. I told you to go get ready for bed. Count to 10 right now. You just cause your child to sin. Okay? Because you cause your child to subjectively determine, do the words that come out of my dad's mouth mean something or not? Are they real or are they not? Okay? Do I need to submit to them or not? No, I don't need to submit to that. I need to submit when he gets to a certain state emotionally. And when he gets to that state emotionally, then he means it. But other than that, his yes isn't yes and his no isn't no. And it's not really true. I believe in some ways that's the same line as swearing. Okay? All of a sudden, I'm going to swear. I mean it! Well, why didn't you mean it when you said you need to go to bed? We've talked about this as parents. He had good parents. That's true. He was a little kid. He never sinned. His will was in submission to his father, and he remained in submission to his father. Can we live in that state? Yes. Jesus died to set us free from the sin nature. Let me finish up with a couple of things in Romans. That Paul guy. Okay? There's in Romans 8. So then, brothers, this is talking, again, Paul talking about his brothers, those who are saved. We are under obligation. Okay? Under obligation, yeah. You've been bought with a price. Jesus died to set us free. He bought us with a price. We are under obligation, not to the flesh, to live according to the flesh. For if we are living according to the flesh, this isn't David, this is Paul, inspired by God to write this. For if you are living according to the flesh, you must die. But if by the Spirit you are putting to death the deeds of the body, you will live. If you are taking what Jesus is saying in the Sermon on the Mount, willing to put it in front of your face, willing to put it as a mirror in front of you and reflect how your life looks according to that, and you are willing, what? To put the deeds of the flesh of the body to death, you will live. For all who are being led by the Spirit of God, these led by my flesh? My sonships were questionable. If I'm led by the Spirit of God, those are the sons of God. Not on the outward, by we do these religious things, don't use certain words, but by the inward man being under obligation, real. Are in the flesh, outside of a relationship with God, are we in slavery? Yeah. Period. We are in slavery. Who are we enslaved to? The world, the flesh, and the devil. All those people that make you mad, that make me mad, they're enslaved to an evil taskmaster. Their fault? They have a choice on who they're going to serve. God has given every man a choice. They were born under that captivity. It's kind of like the scene when you see a little bratty 3-year-old or 4-year-old or whatever age, 2-year-old, I don't care what. See a bratty little kid? Should you be angry at that kid? Why are you acting like this? No, he should be angry at his parents. Okay? Because he has been taught that. He has been led by that. He knows nothing but self. And the child's acting, probably in our culture, most kids know nothing but self. Parents who are bad. Same thing when I see a 28-year-old acting like a brat. What should I do? I love him and feel compassion for him because he's held captive by the enemy. Now, in the same way except that behavior of that child is not okay, and there's potential reason for reproof or correction and training. Same with the 28-year-old, okay? Or whoever. Okay? We have not, in this case, we have not received this. Our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, heirs also, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ. If you say the prayer. Is that what it says? No, that's not what it says. Okay? It says, if we suffer with him, in order that we may be glorified. I want you to put on, go out in the street corner, now people mock you. That's suffering for Christ. No, that's not what he's talking about. I doubt if that too often would be what he's talking about, okay? If our death to self is not suffering, you're not dying. Okay? You're not dying. If it comes easy for me to put on this appearance or act this way or change this behavior myself, it probably doesn't look much like death. Okay? Christ suffered death. That was suffering. His suffering was death. Right? Our suffering is death. Willing to be conformed. Willing to be, to turn the other cheek when we're offended. Jesus doesn't say, he's talking about legitimately or illegitimately, wrongly, being offended. Doesn't matter, but you have justification or validation in the flesh and in this world to be offended. Are we to be offended? Do we have the right to be offended? Or are we to regard that person as more important than ourselves? That person is hurting. That soul is hurting. I mean, are we willing to die to ourselves? Because as men particularly, but actually it's not true. As men, there's an immediate response. As women, there's a 5-year response, you know, that you're going to get even. You know? But still, is there a willingness in and of ourselves to die? With men, there's an instant response of you're something. Okay? And with women, there's, I'll get even someday. It doesn't matter. I'm stereotyping. But the issue is, are we willing to die to that? Are we willing to give up any right to revenge? Any right to offense? Are we willing to die to that? Now, that doesn't mean that if you slap my daughter in the face, I'm not going to kick your something. Okay? That's a different thing. Alright? It's not me being personally offended and me acting out on it. But, are we willing to give up the right to being personally offended? Jesus gave up the right to be personally offended, right? He was relentlessly come at and struck against, right? Tried to kill him. Did he ever retaliate when he was personally offended? No, he didn't. Did he turn the tables over, make a cat of nine tails, and beat some men and chase them out when his father was wrong? Father's house was wrong. He did. There was nothing passive about that. Okay? He did not say, it'd be nice if you guys wouldn't act like this here in the temple. Okay? Not what he said. Okay? It's not what he did. I don't know what he said, if he even said anything, but he made a cat of nine tails and literally drove him out. And he had to be pretty aggressive in it because there was a bunch of them and one of him. And temple guards too. And it doesn't say anything about disciples helping him. Okay? So, this was Jesus being something farther from passive. Rightfully so. Was he angry? He was angry. Did he sin? He didn't sin. But Jesus relentlessly, and at the end it was very obvious, he was spit on. He was slapped. It's incomprehensible in my flesh to understand when you have the resources to call down legions of angels. Okay? They were mocking him, which was mocking his father. Okay? They pulled his beard out. I mean, and it wasn't the physical pain. He was willing to lay his life down to be rejected by God, to take on the sins of those people. Did he allow himself to be personally offended? No. He did not. In fact, he prayed for his enemies. Okay? He cared about his enemies. He died for them, those people. And Jesus said, be perfect. The word is mature and complete. Okay? That's mature and complete. We're called to that. It's not okay that we're just a pathetic bunch of... We're to be willing to take the standard that Jesus says and sit it in front and say, is that what my heart's like? And we go, as I've been doing for the last few months, going, but am I willing to say, okay, God? But it's not this standard here that we've made up. It's not this form of righteousness that we've made up. Not in Sunday morning actions and pretense. Not when I see you on the street, but in life. Every day. Let's pray. Us coming to the point of being able to live as Adam lived in, and Eve lived in the garden and walked with you in perfect fellowship. That was perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. By your mercy, we're under being a lovingly to give us that same power.